We're in the middle of a series in Ecclesiastes. I encourage you to turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 9. It's on page 577 if you have one of the Bibles that we put in the back for you. Ecclesiastes chapter 9. And we're actually going to deal with a big chunk of Ecclesiastes this morning. It all flows together in a way, and it all builds off of itself in the teacher's way. And so we're actually going to finish in the middle of chapter 10 this morning when we get all said and done. But Ecclesiastes chapter 9 is where we're going to start, verse 13. But you may recall from last week, we walked away with the teacher's encouragement to us that because death is bitter, that we should go make life sweet. That was his encouragement, right? That death isn't so bitter for those with saving faith, but it's still bitter. And so it's okay, it's necessary even to go make life sweet within the context of your fear of God. And you may remember that wisdom, we talked about this, wisdom is the fear of God applied in your life. Wisdom is when you navigate life, you apply the fear of God, your faith in God, to navigating life in a godly way. That's what wisdom is. And so based on your fear of God, we saw last week, go enjoy things that satisfy you with wisdom in a godly way. Enjoy the comforts in a godly way. Enjoy relationships in a godly way. And enjoy your work and efforts in a godly way. Because death is bitter, go make life sweet based on your fear of God. With wisdom. And so considering this is from the perspective of Solomon, the man who was gifted extra wisdom by God, the teacher has a strong emphasis on the need for wisdom. You see it often throughout here. And so it's important to remember in the teacher's world that wisdom is godly street smarts, knowing how to navigate life situations in a way that will most honor God. And wisdom in the teacher's world, and in our world as well, godly wisdom often goes against the flow. It's often unconventional in its navigation of life. It doesn't, the wise individual in the teacher's world and even in our world will make decisions that don't always make sense. For instance, you made a godly choice this morning to join with the church, but you could have slept in. And in some ways, sleeping in seems to make a little bit more sense, seems to be a little bit more conventional. There are probably projects you could have started working on this morning because for the rest of the world, the weekend is actually two Saturdays in a row, not one, for those of us that have spent a long time attending church. And so wisdom is godly street smarts, but it is not always conventional. Often it's unconventional. It goes against the flow and how it navigates life, and it's rooted in the fear of God. There is no wisdom without the fear of God. And so when you hear me say wisdom, don't think smart, don't think knowledge, think navigating life in a godly way. There is no wisdom without the fear of God in your life. So the teacher returns to reflecting now openly on how living is best done with wisdom. Remember, go enjoy life, but be wise. Go enjoy life in a godly way. He's returning now openly to this, living is best done with wisdom. Wisdom is a benefit in life. And so we pick up with this in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 13. And I'm going to read through verse 16. So the teacher says, I also saw under the sun this example of wisdom that greatly impressed me. There was once a small city with only a few people in it, and a powerful king came against it, surrounded it, and built huge siege works against it. Now there lived in that city a man, poor but wise, and he saved the city by his wisdom. But nobody remembered that poor man. So I said, wisdom is better than strength. Stop there in the middle of that verse. So the teacher is impressed. He's impressed by this example of wisdom's ability to navigate life well. Compared to the strength in the situation, he describes this strong king, the strength of prestige. The strength of an army, of a king. He's impressed by this wisdom and how it compared to the conventional approach to the situation in life, wisdom won out, and this situation impressed him. He remembers this a pretty predictable situation, and I say predictable because you look at the odds, look at the stats in this story. Who should win this occasion? The small city or the powerful king? The one with the great siege works or the one with poor men in the city? Which one of these should win? The stats suggest, right, if you're looking at just the sheet that describes the facts of this, the small city is weak. The small city is insignificant. It lacks resources. The king and his army are powerful. They're dominant. They're capable. They have resource. And when you look at this story, it seems pretty predictable. The pundits of the day would call this a victory early for the king. They'd say there's no way that this city stands up against what is coming against them before it ever begins. A conventional perspective is the small city doesn't have a chance in this situation, but the small city has an unconventional advantage, a man with wisdom. That's what the teacher observed. He watches this happen, a man willing to live out his fear of God and follow the leading of his faith. This isn't a clever man. That's not what wisdom means. It's not a clever man who thought shrewdly about what can we do. It was a man who was willing to follow God and listen to God and allow God to help him navigate life in the best way. It was a man who was following the leading of his faith in God. And this hasn't resulted in the conventional expected externals for this man with his culture, right? His culture might assume that this man should be wealthy, but he's not, he's poor. And so his wisdom hasn't conventionally resulted in the things that you would expect a man with wisdom to have. He's a poor man, right? But he follows his faith in God. He doesn't have luxury or worldly prosperity, but following his wisdom did save the city. And that stuck with the teacher. He watched this situation. He watched it unfold. This is a real thing. He said, I saw. It means he really observed this happen. That in that city, whoever this man was, he was poor. He didn't have the luxuries of what you would expect of someone with influence, but he saved the city with his wisdom. And following his wisdom was significant for them. His choice to navigate situations and submission to God was the difference maker. And so the teacher's conclusion is simple in verse 16. I watched this, I observed it, and I came to one very simple conclusion. Wisdom is better than strength. It's got to be the conclusion. When you look at the odds, when you look at the tail of the tape, the powerful, strong army should have won, but they didn't. And the only reason they didn't is because of this man's wisdom. Therefore, wisdom is better than strength. That's the only explanation for what happened during the siege. There's no reason that city survived, and yet it did. So clearly, strength, power, prestige, resource, all of the things that the poor man was not, without the fear of God, without a submission to God in decisions and actions, they're not the benefit that conventionally you would think they are. Wisdom is the game changer in life. When Paul was on a prison ship to Rome and it was shipwrecked, as recorded in Acts, it was Paul's wisdom, his fear of God, his willingness to obey and listen to God that rescued and saved everyone involved, not the Roman soldiers, not the conventional wisdom of the day. It was Paul and his wisdom is following and chasing after God. Wisdom is the game changer in life, but it's not always conventional. It's not always going to look like the world or the community, the society thinks it should look. So let's pick up again in verse 15. So the man, that poor man but wise, saved the city by his wisdom, but nobody remembered that poor man. And so I said, the teacher remembered him, I said, wisdom's better than strength, but the poor man's wisdom is despised and his words are no longer heeded. So he said, I may be the only person that remembers what saved the city. Nobody remembers that this wisdom is what saved this city. People don't remember that about this situation. The man's wisdom is despised. Despised means just looked down on, forgotten, turned your back on, right? Despised. It doesn't mean criticized. It just means, what was that again? How did that happen? I don't remember. It's not coming to mind. I just remember we were successful. It's no longer heeded. It's no longer remembered. Whatever godly thoughts the man provided his community that led to their saving, it was eventually overlooked. It was eventually forgotten. As happens, the story became, and then you can see that this might happen, the story became not, it was a poor man's wisdom and submission to God that saved this city. The story became the classic underdog story. Right? Against all odds, this is what the teacher's saying, what actually saved the city is forgotten. This man's wisdom that saved the city was forgotten. So the story becomes, against all odds, a small city stands up with a powerful king and survived. Imagine that said with the voice of a man that can speak movie trailers and commercials. Right? Against all odds, a small city stood up to the powerful king and survived. No mention of the godly fear that this poor man led his city in. His wisdom was forgotten. The city accomplished their feat, what the teacher's saying. It gets forgotten, and the story becomes, do you remember how that city stood up to that king? That would happen, though? Is that what happened? But that's how this story becomes remembered. And you can imagine how this could happen, and I'll give you an example. David defeated Goliath because of his fear of God, his faith and submission to God. God directed him He was convinced that God's reputation was at stake. And so he in his fear of God, he stood up to Goliath, and his fear of God caused him to play to his strengths and go choose those five stones. But it was his words to Goliath, right? It is, my God will win this day, right? My God is going to be victorious today. He defeated Goliath because of that fear of God. He chose the wise but unconventional path because everybody in the day looked at him and said, you're not the conventional choice to fight this man. Right, let's at least put some armor on you. And he said, no, this isn't going to work for me. This isn't how I do things. This isn't what fits me. And so unconventionally, a shepherd boy who had some experience with throwing stones stood in front of a giant because of his fear of God and said, my faith in God is going to deliver this stone into the head of that giant. But the story of David and Goliath, as it's popularly known today outside of church and even sometimes in church, is about slaying your giants, conquering your fears and the obstacles in front of you. As a legend and a story, there is little to no mention popularly of the faith and wisdom of David, his fear of God. It's not, you can go conquer that obstacle with your faith because God is going to be the one to actually win that victory. It's, go slay your giants. The underdog story. Wisdom is forgotten. And people tend to overlook or forget the key of wisdom. Just go slay your giants. And it's easy to disregard wisdom. It's easy to disregard it. Acting with a sensitivity to the fear of God is a behind the scenes kind of a thing. And so that story, if nobody keeps reminding you David acted with wisdom, you look at the story and you think, oh no, he took it upon himself. Someone had to do it. David went and slayed his giant. So even in choices that used to be out of wisdom, what the teacher is revealing to us, it's no longer wisdom that drives them. It's no longer the fear of God that motivates them. Wisdom, the poor man's wisdom, is despised. It's no longer heeded. It's no longer what motivates those decisions, right? We leave out the my God will deliver. We leave out the my God will deliver and the instructions that need to be followed. We leave those things out. We don't do it with our faith in God. We do it because it seems like it's the right thing to do. This is the good thing to do. Wisdom is forgotten over results. And so the advice becomes, go slay your giants. No mention of, you need to walk by faith. And that might mean confronting a giant. We leave out, my God will deliver. So we have giant slayers, but not in the fear of God. Instead, it's in the attempt to make positive changes in their lives, to be better. I want to be better. I want to make a positive change. I need to get this out of my life. The external results eventually overshadow what should be the hidden key, and the different and a different key to success is assumed. Like the hidden key to success that should be there is your faith in God is what gets you through this. Living with wisdom is what will get you through these things. Living with wisdom is what saved that city. Living with wisdom is what saved David. Living with wisdom is what saved Paul in that shipwreck. Living with wisdom is the game changer. But a different key to success is assumed when we leave out, my God will deliver. And so the external results, you know, is overshadowing it. And so the key to success becomes strength, prestige, resources, self-betterment. Find more resources. Find a way to be stronger in the situation. Bring in more influence in your life. Become a better person, and you'll be able to do those things. But the teacher isn't buying it. Teacher isn't buying it. You know, the story may be now, man, that city, they really rallied together and they really stood strong. And it was to the man, they were shoulder to shoulder in the face of that army. But the teacher's not buying it because he knows what actually worked. He knows that it was wisdom that actually saved that city. Right? Despite its often unconventional appearance or approach, wisdom is better than strength. Teacher's seen it. Living in the fear of God is better than living in your own abilities. So he continues in verse 17. The quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded than the shouts of a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Now, if in most of your Bibles, the verse 17 visibly looks different than verse 16 probably, because what the author is beginning to do is he's going to shift to a proverbial style of writing. I'm going to begin to collect proverbs and put them into a string of thought. And so that's why it looks different. It's also why you're going to start going, there's some weird word images or things that I'm just not grabbing what he's putting down here. But that's what he does in verse 17. He shifts to a proverbial way of writing. But others assumed that keys to success in life and situations are going to be strength. They're going to be prestige. They're going to be your own know-how. They're going to be your resources. They're going to be your ability to make yourself better. That's what people assume are going to be the key to success in life. And we're going to forget wisdom. They're going to easily overshadow or outshout wisdom, right? Verse 17, the quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded. You should listen to a wise person, but the shouts of a ruler of fools are going to be a lot louder. And so those other keys to success are going to get a lot louder in life. They're going to outshout wisdom. But the teacher is convinced the living out of the fear of God is better in your life, no matter what. Wisdom is better than strength. So let your faith and your trust in God be what motivates and navigates your life, however unconventional. So however unconventional it may seem, this is our first, we need to hear this. However unconventional it may seem, wisdom is better. Chasing after God is better, always. No matter how unconventional it may seem, no matter how different it will look, and maybe the response or the results in your life are not going to be what the world is going to anticipate them to be, but however unconventional it may seem, wisdom, living in the fear of God, chasing after your faith in God is always going to be better. Deal? It's always going to be better. Pursue wisdom. Now, here's what we can't do, and what the teacher is a little bit afraid that we're going to do, and you're familiar with him now. He starts to wander. His mind gets sidetracked sometimes. He chases after those things. For those of us with some maybe deficits in our attention, we understand why he does these things. He chases after rabbit trails, and he's like, oh yeah, what were we talking about? Let's get back to it. And that's what he's about to do. But so he's gonna chase after this. Now here's what we can't do. So wisdom is better. However unconventional, wisdom is better in your life. And I don't mean cleverness, I don't mean knowledge, I mean knowing what God would have you to do in this situation. It's better than being strong in yourself, than slaying your own giants. Wisdom is better, and it might mean you don't slay that giant. But here's what we can't do. We can't let fools and foolishness have a space in our life. Don't let, and this is where he's going to go with it, don't let, if wisdom, however unconventional, is better in life, the way God says to live your life, the instructions God gives you in every situation, if that's better, then we can't. Don't let fools and foolishness have a space in your life. Look at verse 18 again, but now the second half of it. He made it pretty clear. Wisdom's better. Hard to argue with it. But one sinner destroys much good. As a dead fly gives perfume a bad smell, so a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. The heart of the wise inclines to the right, but the heart of the fool to the left. You can't let fools and foolishness have a space in your life because of the value of wisdom. The teacher reacts strongly to what he's seen and understands about the fool and about foolishness. Now, let me make sure that we're on the same page about what he means when he says fool or foolishness. Foolishness in the teacher's Hebrew culture is the opposite of wisdom. So wisdom is the living in a godly way. It's navigating life in a godly way, the way that your fear of God, your faith in God would dictate to you. Foolishness comes out of a lack of fear of God. Foolishness comes out of a lack of faith in God, and it results in living with ungodliness. That's foolishness. The foolishness would be living without consideration for what God would have said in a situation or what God would want for you in your life. And the result is, because I haven't considered what God would want, the result is godlessness or ungodliness. Teacher sees no difference even. He says it in the end of verse 18, and then again at the beginning of 1 and in 2. The teacher sees no difference between the words fool and sinner. He uses them interchangeably there. The sinner is a fool and a fool is a sinner because there's no fear of God. There's no fear of God, and so they don't live with godliness. They don't navigate life with godliness because of that lack of reverence for God. Or maybe their outright belief, the fool is prone to wrong direction, he says. And so he even said, look, even just a little bit of it, you might demonstrate a lot of wisdom, but if there's no fear of God in your life, then it makes you smell real bad. Really bad. Apparently their flies smelled super bad in the Hebrew culture to outweigh their perfume. But the fool, because they don't trust God, they don't believe in God, they don't live godliness, then they're prone to, he says, the wrong direction or poor choices. Specifically, impulsive. Fools are impulsive. Fools are selfish. They're self-centered because there's no fear of God. There's a fear of self. There's no faith in God, there's a faith in self. And so there's impulsiveness. I know what to do. There's self-centeredness. This should be for me, right? No one else should be able to tell me what to do. There's selfishness. I want the things that I want and I will go get it. And so where wisdom is rooted in faith in God, foolishness is rooted in faith in oneself. Wisdom is rooted in a fear of God, a reverence, placing God where he deserves to be because he is Yahweh. He is holy. He is everything that we are not and more. He is above us and we cannot reach up to him no matter how hard we try. That's the fear of God. The fear of oneself says, you know what? I think I could be up there too. I know enough. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. I'm better. I don't need somebody coming in and telling me how to live my life, giving me some sort of other truth. I've got my own truth. Foolishness is rooted in faith in oneself. And this is because its source is the sin nature and it's a problem of the heart. Folly is in the heart. In Psalm chapter 14, verse 1, David reveals this. He says, the fool says in his heart, the fool, the one that doesn't believe in God, there is no God in the heart. And they're corrupt and their deeds are vile and there is none of them that does good. They may look like they're doing good. Conventionally, they may look like they're handling life well, but they're not. They're a fool. They're foolish. And the reason they're foolish is because in their heart, no faith in God. There's no fear of God. That's what he says in verse 2 here in Ecclesiastes chapter 10. The heart of the wise lies to the right, but the heart, the fool, the left. It's in the heart, in oneself. And the result is incompetence spiritually. And that's what David says. The result is vile deeds. It's spiritual incompetence. And a result, and it comes out in their living. And because the world is full of fools, sinners, this living will likely look conventional. It will look normal everywhere else around you. Foolish living, living without a fear of God, living based on a fear of oneself is going to look very conventional, which is why wisdom doesn't. It's not going to look conventional. It's not going to look the way everyone else would be living. But the teacher says, don't be fooled. Don't be fooled by it. There is a right side of the road of life, and there is a left side. Now, and I want to, before we continue, I need to apologize to all the left-handed people in the room. In the teacher's culture, left-handed people didn't like them that much. And there was a general sense that left hand was worse than right hand. We don't feel that way today, all right? So for those of you that are lefties, we love you just as much as we love the righties. But you have to know that because of what he's about to say, because he says the heart of the wise inclines to the right. And the heart of the fool inclines to the left. What he's saying is there is a right side of the road of life and there is a left side of the road of life. The right is the good and right navigation in the fear of God. And so the wise are going to walk on the right side of the road because that is the wise, it's not the British side, right? So it's the correct side of the road. You're walking in the wisdom of God. On the right side. And the left is incompetent. It's unnatural. It's without wisdom. You're walking on the wrong side of the road. But this isn't a matter of just choices, right? You're choosing unwisely. You're choosing the foolish way. But it's also a matter of the heart because it's within every individual to be a fool, to walk on the wrong side of the road. Jesus himself says that folly, this impulsive, self-centered, wrong living, it comes within from within. It's in the heart. He says that in Mark chapter 7, that folly is in the heart. Foolishness, foolish living is a result of a lack of genuine faith, a fear of God. And that's why the teacher interchanges a fool and a sinner in verse 18. He calls him a sinner, but later he calls him a fool. And as far as he is concerned, foolishness, living without the fear of God, has a tendency to overthrow, overshadow, ruin wisdom in one's life or in one's community. If people aren't living with wisdom, I'm going to say that again, if there's foolishness in the community, if there's foolishness in your life, it's going to overshadow the opportunity or even the attempts to live in a godly way. It's going to ruin wisdom. Things get fouled up, he says, by even a little bit of foolishness, even a little lack of fear of God in your life. Faith in yourself instead of in God is going to ruin your walk, your spiritual competence. Or foolishness in one person in a community that doesn't fear God can undo or drown out wisdom. It can overshout godly living. And we can't let that happen if wisdom is the key. Wisdom is the treasure that it is. And this is why I always encourage you, and we're getting there in November, and you're going to want to go out and vote, and you're going to vote for the best person that you can vote for. But the best thing that you can do if you want to see change in your community is walk to your neighbor's house, knock on their door, and share the gospel with them. that I won't be a fool anymore. Because foolishness, even a little bit in the community, is going to overshadow wisdom. Wisdom is walking in the fear of God, and we should want everyone to walk in the fear of God because wisdom is the key. Wisdom is better than strength. It's the treasure. It's a treasure. That's what the Proverbs say. Wisdom is a treasure. It is worth finding, worth seeking, worth hunting. Foolishness in others, foolishness in yourself can't have space in your life, or it will destroy the godly life. And so in his meandering kind of way, the teacher's going to reflect on fools and foolishness. And through that, we can learn how to not give them space in our life. So four reasons not give them space in our life. First, we need to take note of the fools around us. You have to take note of the fools around you. And it sounds mean, right? It sounds mean to be like, all right, so you're a fool, that's a fool, he's a fool, they're fools. Take note of them. I will put a sticker on your back so when you walk around, I remember, okay, no, that was a fool, he's a fool. That sounds mean, and the teacher's actually going to get even more mean than this, right? He's going to sound even more mean and more blunt than that, than just make sure you notice them. Look at verse 3. Even as fools walk along the road, and they're on the wrong side of the road, they lack sense and show everyone how stupid they are. This is a lot more blunt. That's a lot more mean. And what he's saying is they're obvious. It's obvious. Take note of them. Pay attention to them. Later in verse 15 of chapter 10, he says they can't even figure out the way to town. And he's saying this in a culture where you don't really ever go outside of town. And so he's living in a religious culture, a culture that believes that. He's saying, look, they can't figure out what every other person in their community, the religious community, the wise community knows, and that's how to get home. Right? They can't figure out the way to town. They're on the wrong side of the road. And he's speaking from this spiritual perspective. Fools lack spiritual sense. Fools lack godly inclinations because they don't truly fear God. They have a spiritual incompetence, a spiritual stupidity that shows in contrast to the Bible and godliness because they aren't living by faith, right? Not in God, at least. They're living by faith maybe in themselves, but they're not living by faith in God. And so you may be walking down the same road with somebody else. You may be living through the same situations as somebody else. You may be in the same culture and the community as somebody else, but godliness, wisdom will lead all of those who fear God to navigate life in a certain way on this side of the road. And though you may be on the same road, watch, because the fool will obviously be walking on that side. They're obviously, when you are in a spiritual community, when you may be walking the same road in life and wisdom is telling you all to walk on this side of the road because this is what someone who fears God should be doing. You're going to look across the street and you're going to see, what is that guy doing over there then? That we're walking through the same situations. We're in the same community. We're saying we're dealing with the same things, and they're going to be on the left side of the road. You know, I've had this thought too with my children. When we'll go for a hike sometimes, or maybe to Wintergreen Gorge or something. And if you're walking down the path, and maybe this has happened to you, as you're walking down the path, there's a giant mud puddle in the middle of the path, right? And so as I'm approaching the mud puddle, I'm beginning to calculate where the least amount of mud is and which side of the path we should go to, right? And as the one leading, I'm assuming that everybody is going to follow me, right, along the one that I've chosen because, you know, I might be going out into the weeds a little bit, but I'm going to get around this mud puddle with the least amount of mud on my shoes. And then I look over to the right and one of them is just like plowing right through the mud puddle on the other side of the path. And I look at that, I'm like, what in the world are you doing? Every one of us could have seen this was the better way to go. But when we get done and they've got mud on their shoes and I don't have, so we had to clean their shoes off. Take note of the people around you that have mud on your shoes. The ones that have mud on their shoes, take note of them, look around them. And when they navigate life in a certain way and they go through situations and they come out worse for wear on the other side and they didn't navigate it with wisdom, take note of those people. Pay attention to the ones that have mud on their shoes. They're on the wrong side of the road. You can look for it. You can find it. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 16. He says, all who are prudent act with knowledge, but fools expose their folly. They're going to have mud on their shoes. It's going to show that they are not living with wisdom, that they're living in foolishness. You should be able to recognize them. Non-Christians will be wearing their mud boots. Professing Christians can have pretty muddy feet too. We need to recognize when someone who might even have a prosperous or well-established life, they may walk the church life, but recognize when someone shows their spiritual incompetence, shows their lack of faith, they may slay their giants, but not in the fear of God. not as a result of a life of faith, and it will show their shoes will be muddy. They will demonstrate self-centeredness, a selfishness, a focus on faith, them. They'll talk about self-betterment and strategies, but they won't talk about God and faith. And when everyone else reads the one thing in the Bible, they'll be reading something else, or rather, probably not even reading it at all. And they walk on the same road, but not the same way, not the godly way. And take note of those people. Their foolishness will destroy good. It will outweigh wisdom, even yours. And it's important to know who they are. That's what the teacher's saying. You've got to notice them. Everyone's going to notice them, and they're on the wrong side of the road. They've got muddy boots. Stay on the right side. Stay on the right side and take observation and say, you know what? If I need advice, if I need thoughts, if I need prayer, I probably shouldn't go for that person, but I'm going to pray for them. I'm going to try to help them and get them over the wise side of the road. Take note of the fools around you. The second way that we can see here to not give fools and foolishness a space in our lives, we can see it in verse 4. The teacher says, if a ruler's anger rises against you, don't leave your post. Calmness can lay great offenses to rest. Again, it seems like he's stringing together some proverbs and we're trying to see how they fit. But what he's really saying is we shouldn't respond to foolishness. Don't respond to fools. Don't respond to foolishness. The teacher is actually referencing when he says verse 4 here, if a ruler's anger rises against you, he's referencing the ruler that he mentioned in verse 17. The ruler of fools. He's the ruler of fools. And this is likely a criticism of him, not directly the people under him. He's very much given over to living his own way, this ruler, without any fear or faith in God. So he's not the ruler of fools. He's the king of fools, right? He is the fool of fools. That's what he's saying. He's not criticizing the people under him, that everybody under him is fools, although we'll see later on there are definitely fools that he rules, but he is the ruler of fools. He's the court jester of fools. He doesn't live life with a fear or faith in God, which means how he lives and he acts, even his anger, even his criticism of you is foolish. It's not rooted in faith or a fear of God. So don't respond to it. Don't let it affect you. Somebody once said, don't take criticism from someone you wouldn't take advice from. That's what he's saying. Right? This is a fool. This is a fool that's yelling at this man at his post. And he's saying, you stand there and you don't take it. You don't listen to him. You don't take the advice from him. Right? It's not rooted in a spiritual perspective or truth. It's not rooted in a motivation to pursue godliness. His actions, his anger is rooted in ungodliness. And so if a ruler's anger rises against you, don't leave your post. Homeless can lay great offenses to rest. And there he gives you the wise. The godly response to that. Stay the course. Don't respond to it. Don't let it affect you. And he's talking about this ungodly anger in the ruler chewing out his subject for no good reason. Stay the course of wisdom, he says. But what about us? Don't let the foolishness of others around you, the ungodliness of others around you, dictate your behavior. Don't let someone else's ungodliness determine what you do. Dictate what you're going to choose, how you're going to live. And I've told countless teens and others this. We don't let other people's ungodliness affect you into ungodly action. Just because they do the wrong thing doesn't mean we do the wrong thing back. Don't let others' ungodliness dictate what you're going to do, because the tendency is to respond with ungodliness. Sinful people do sinful things. We can't respond with sin to those things, but we tend to, and it's possible. You fear God, and that should be your motivation. That should determine how you walk the path in life, not someone else's ungodliness. Your godliness, your fear of God should determine how you walk. And so don't respond, even if it's tempting, to ungodliness. Sometimes ungodly people will treat you in ungodly ways. They're foolish and you are not. Don't return it. Don't react to it. Don't give it back. Don't respond to it. Don't let it change or affect you. And this likely, if we were honest, more than, because we don't have the same king in situation that they do, this likely will be more of an issue for you when you observe, and we've talked about this a few weeks ago, when you observe the lack of consequences in their foolish life, you may be tempted to think, well, I can live that way too. Foolishness will look prosperous. It will appear to have its rewards, and it will tempt you, that the foolish living will tempt you to respond, present you with conventional success and positive results that you might want in your life. In that case, the fool isn't angry at you. He's bragging to you. Look at what I'm doing. Look at how everything I've done. Look at all I have in my life. He's peer pressuring you into abandoning your post at Wisdom. Don't respond to it. It may seem unconventional to them. It may seem unconventional to everybody else around you, but stand at the post of Wisdom. Don't respond to the foolishness. Don't get your shoes muddy. Just because he's saying, look, nobody else is on this side of the road. It looks real easy. Don't get your shoes muddy. Go to that side. Stay the course of Wisdom. Even if foolishness is yelling in your face, if it's flaunting its prosperity, its pleasure, its success, don't respond to it. Don't abandon the post of Wisdom. Don't respond to foolishness. And then take note of that man, that person who was bragging about their foolishness, that was living out their ungodliness. Take note of them. Don't follow them. Third thing is in verse 5. But take note of those fools around you. Don't respond. Foolishness, verse 5. There is an evil I have seen under the sun, the sort of error that arises from a ruler. Fools are put in many high positions while the rich occupy the low ones. I've seen slaves on horseback while princes go on foot like slaves. Where whoever digs a pit may fall into it. Whoever breaks through a wall may be bitten by a snake. I hope that's not true because that sounds terrifying. And I'm not going to be doing any construction anytime soon. I am very afraid of snakes. But I don't think that happens around here. Verse 9, whoever quarries stones may be injured by them. Whoever splits logs may be endangered by them. But what he's saying with all of this colorful description is don't trust fools. Don't trust fools. So the teacher describes a situation first in which a ruler, probably the foolish one but from before, begins putting people in positions of influence and responsibility who also don't fear God. And so this ruler who is trusting in himself, he has no faith in God, only faith in himself, has been making decisions. And now he's beginning to put other people who don't fear God, who have no faith in God, he's putting them in influential and responsible positions. They don't live governed by a faith in God though. So he says, verse 6, fools are put in high positions. And this is an error that rises from this foolish ruler. And the result is, from the teacher's perspective, evil. That's what he calls it. I have seen an evil under the sun. A fool appoints other fools to responsibility, contrary to what God would want. As the teacher observes, the leadership of people who don't fear God results in, and he begins to describe it, the leadership of people who don't fear God results in an upside-down sense of right and wrong. You see him describing it there. The leadership of people who don't fear God results in an upside down sense of right and wrong. I don't need to point out to you the issues in our communities today. The leadership of foolish people who don't fear God results in an upside down sense of right and wrong. And as a result, society reverses godliness and ungodliness. Self-serving, not God-serving decisions are made because of fools. The rich, the people with resources and wisdom, and in the teacher's mind, you need to know this, godly. The rich have resources, they have wisdom, and so they're godly. They have the lowest positions in society, he observes in verse 6. It doesn't make sense. It's an upside down way of doing things, right? Godliness and ungodliness are reversed. How's that going to help? How is it going to help to have the rich, the ones that he believes to be the godly ones, how is that going to help to have them in the lowest positions in society? Then he goes on, the slave is on horseback while the princes walk. Nothing makes sense in the way that it should when people who don't fear God are given responsibility. Nothing will make sense, at least in God's. And the teacher's implication and his warning is don't trust fools. If a person isn't guided by objective truth, by God's truth, if they don't have a fear of God, then they shouldn't be given a long leash. They're going to make ungodly decisions. Don't be surprised when they do. They shouldn't be afforded the benefit of the doubt. They shouldn't be trusted the way that you would trust someone who's following God's spirit. Don't trust the fool. The fool fears only themselves. They respect themselves. They guide themselves. And that's not someone that you should trust. They don't have the same decision-making process that we do. When we make decisions, because we fear God, when we make decisions, and I hope this is true of you, we should always make our decisions with this book open. We shouldn't be making decisions without consulting God and involving him in that process and saying that prayer, God, guide me with your thoughts. Bring the Holy Spirit, bring out the guidance that I need to make this choice. And we study scriptures and then we make our choice. And that is not the process of a fool. But don't trust them. Don't trust them with that long leash. They shouldn't be trusted the way you should trust someone else who you know they're going to consult God's word. They're going to consult God's spirit before they make a choice here. The fool fears only themselves. They respect themselves, no one else. not someone you should depend on. Their decisions may seem great in society, and society may love it, and that shouldn't surprise you because they're fools. From a godly perspective, they won't be spiritually profitable. The decisions won't be good. And even more, he goes on, fools, and this is what he's saying in verses 8 and 9. We'll read them again in a moment. But fools can somehow take even productive activity and make it dangerous. In everyday life, trusting fools can result in nothing good. Verse 8, he said, I'll read it again. So whoever digs a pit, fool, they find a way to fall into it. Whoever, they break through a wall and somehow on the other side, they're bitten by a snake. Whoever quarries stones may be injured by them. So he's saying they're chiseling out the stone above them. Right? They find a way to be injured in everyday life. Whoever splits logs may be endangered by them because you are either a fool or you are trusting a fool. And they find a way, screw things up spiritually, biblically. They don't do things in a godly way, and it may look normal. You might think, what harm can come from this, from trusting this person in this event? They're a good person. They give good advice, whatever it might be. But the bottom line is, don't trust someone who doesn't trust God. Don't trust someone who doesn't trust God. It'll come back to bite you. Foolishness, living without roots in the fear of God, will hurt them, and it will hurt you. Fools find a way into folly. So don't trust them. Don't give them a place. Don't give them that space in your life. But take note of the people who are not chasing after God in life, and don't elevate them. Don't elevate them in your life. Don't respond to them when they criticize you, when they come at you with their bragging or their temptation or their insults, whatever it might be. Don't respond to them. They're fools. Right? We don't. If it was someone who was coming at me with scripture, that's different. But don't trust them. Don't trust them because they don't trust God. And then fourth, in verse 12, words from the mouth of the wise are gracious, but fools are consumed by their own lips. At the beginning, their words are folly, and at the end, they are wicked madness. So they start without faith, and in the end, they just are evil when it gets to the end of it. And fools multiply words. No one knows what is coming. Who can tell someone else what will happen after them? Toil of fools wearies them, meaning all their talking. They do not know the way to town. In the end, they don't actually have answers. They have no idea where they're going. So the fourth and final suggestion from the teacher is, don't listen to fools. Don't listen to foolishness. The words of the wise are gracious, right? The words from the mouth of the wise are gracious because their source is in the fear of God. And if it's a wise person who you know chases after God and has a compelling, convicted faith in God, listen to them, but don't listen to the fools. God's grace is revealed through the wise, but the words of the fool aren't gracious because the source is the fool themselves. It's their own truth. So their own words will devour them, he says. They're self-destructive. It's giant slaying without faith. And the ideas and words of someone who has no fear of God will be destructive, and they will destroy you too if you listen to them. If you let them influence you, if you internalize them, they may seem like common sense. They may match the message of society. It might be popular thought. They may label it as truth. But if the source isn't a fear of God, isn't it the Bible, then it isn't truth. Biblical wisdom is often going to be unconventional. It's on the other side of the road. And the fool's thoughts, their strategies, their ideas come from their inner character, like everyone's, but their inner character, their heart is definitively lacking submission to God. Don't listen to them. It's lacking his spirit, and it won't result in obedience to him. It won't result in godly living. But don't listen to fools. Don't take advice from them. Listen to the wise. If a person is not driven by faith in God, does not have the spirit inside them to guide them, don't listen to them. Don't integrate their message into your life. So who do you listen to? Who are the influences in your life? They better not be fools, because that will turn out to be destructive in your life. And someday you're going to end up slaying your giants, and you're going to forget, I'm supposed to be doing this in the fear of God. And yours is just an underdog story with its source in you, not what God wants. Don't give fools and foolishness space in your life. Don't listen to them. They may seem genuine. They may seem well-intended. They may seem put together. They may sound good with society. But if they don't have a fear in God, don't give it the time. Jesus gives his own word picture that gives us a really good idea of what the teacher is ultimately revealing to us here. I just want you to see this to close. This is in Matthew chapter 7, verses 24 to 27. He says, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man. Stop. That is wisdom. Hearing God's words, putting it into practice is godly living. Fear God. You trust him. Live like it. So it's like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man. They are a fool who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great clash. Do not trust a foolish man. It is a house on sand. Don't listen to them. Don't give them space. Don't trust them. Notice who's building the house on the beach. It might be a great looking house. It might be a beach house. Right? There's going to be a great view of the ocean on that house, but don't trust him. Notice it. The wise man went unflashy. He went unconventional and he weathered the storm. It was a benefit to him. Fear God and live like it. Don't abandon that post that's founded on his words, founded on his truth. And don't give your trust to and listen to and be influenced by someone who doesn't fear God. It's a beach house below high tide. Twist for us today for application that we have to consider. And this is, hope you hear this and think about this. You might be that fool. It's possible that that fool that we've been talking about isn't someone that you should avoid. Teacher's been telling us to keep a fool at an arm's length, to avoid ideas, to avoid people, avoid thoughts that aren't rooted in the fear of God. But maybe he's been telling us to keep you at an arm's length. And the question is worth asking, are you a fool? Are you living a conventional life rooted in your own impulses and a focus on yourself? Are you living based not on a heart that fears God, but one that has ultimate faith in yourself? If we checked your shoes, would they be muddy? Because while the wise around you live with wisdom and avoid the puddles, the same road, you're on the other side walking through them because you just trust yourself. Should we avoid you? Should you avoid you? Living, and hear me, and hear Jesus' words, living with a lack of the fear of God, even in small areas of your life, danger. There should be no room in your life for foolishness, yours or anyone else. For this reason, we need to make sure that our heart is rooted in fear of God, foolishness, and the fools at a healthy distance. Let me pray for you. Father, I ask that you really press into our hearts this morning and draw out that conviction. Holy Spirit, will you needle us? Will you pierce us with the words that we have heard this morning and help us to identify and recognize either I am a fool, I have lived with foolishness, and it is a beach house below high tide, and that needs to change. I want to fear God. I want to have faith in God. I want to believe God. I want to trust God. Would you press that into the hearts that need to hear it this morning? Cause us to respond with faith. Cause us to respond with conviction. And even this morning, if there's someone that feels that knows I have been the fool, would they cry out to you this morning, God, help me believe you. Help me trust you. I'm sorry for my foolishness. Help me live by faith. Help us all, God, live by faith. Help us to keep foolishness at an arm's length in ourselves and in those around us. And help us to pray for those who live without a fear of you and in our own faith in you, pursue you, chase you, walk that road of wisdom. Help us to not leave that post of wisdom. Help us navigate life in a godly way. And I pray for all those in our community that are close to us, that are near to us, that are in power over us, those that have been given responsibility, don't live with a fear in you. They don't decide because of a faith in you. God, bring them to their knees of faith. And if we're the ones that are the catalyst, that are the voice, that are the feet, that are the hands that need to go, you give us the courage to knock on the doors, share our faith, bring about that change. Love you, God. I want to chase after you, follow you. And I